Well, brethren, how are you doing? I'm not asking that question because I expect an answer, but I want you to think about that. How are you doing right now? Are you at rest? Is the Sabbath day? Are you at peace? Are you content? Are you struggling? You know, is there a trial that you're enduring? We just went through many of the prayer requests of people who are suffering health trials, afflictions, pain. Also, for the rest of us, as we look around the world, so much of our world perspective is formed by what we see and what we hear. I believe that a lot of what we are hearing is being presented to us with an agenda. Some of you have heard of what a fishmonger is. A fishmonger is a person who sells fish. I think that a lot of what we're hearing nowadays is called fear-mongering. It's something to promote fear, to instill that into us. For a stint in my life, I was a news reporter, and the first lesson that I was taught was, if it bleeds, it leads. That this is what grips people, what grabs people's attention, what pulls us in and captivates us. I think it's interesting that word captivate, that's taken from being a captive, bound to something. So how do we think we're doing? If we look around the world today, how bad is it? How bad has it gotten? Our perspective is how we see things, how we visualize it. From our own history, from our own background, how we see the world around us and how well we think we're doing. I want to start by telling you about a friend of mine, a young man that I met. Well, he wasn't a young man, we were kids, when we met at church services in Big Sandy. I think we were 11 years old. And we grew up together, fishing and hunting and getting into all sorts of trouble. And at the age of 21, my friend enlisted in the military, in the Army. He became he was put on a tank crew. Eventually, he was made a sergeant and given the responsibility of being a tank commander. Eric excelled, his name is Eric. He excelled at that position, at that job of helping and mentoring new young soldiers who were underneath him. And we stayed in touch through the years. We, you know, every time he went on deployment or came home, we would talk on the phone quite a bit and try to get together when we were able. Well, back in 2006, Eric was on his second deployment in Iraq, and he has the distinction of having been in, I believe it was the first M1A Abrams tank that was ever destroyed by an IED. They didn't think that was possible at the time, because Abrams are so heavily fortified, so strengthened with so much armor, they didn't think that an explosive device could puncture one. But this was not a normal explosive device that they ran over. They were actually ordnances that had been recovered and buried specifically with the intent of taking out a tank. And my friend happened to be in that tank. I won't go into all the details, but we'll suffice it to say that the tank went off, it exploded, the ordnance went up through the center of the tank. My friend was incredibly wounded. However, he was still able to maintain consciousness and fight off the insurgents, who then swarmed the tank that he was in. He fought them off with every weapon that he had at hand. And then as the cavalry arrived, he was actually down to fighting them off with just his pistol. He had lost the use of his left hand, his leg, and his left eye. Well, time went on, and they, again, well, not, I don't want to say time went on, but Eric was still awake and alive when the cavalry arrived, and medics crawled into the tank to try and work on him, and a helicopter came in, medevac, to take him to the hospital, and my friend died. He died in that helicopter with the medevac team, and they brought him back to life. They resuscitated him. Took him to a field hospital in Iraq where my friend died again, the second time. Later on, as they were again moving him to other hospitals, bigger hospitals, trying to get him to Germany to a large regular hospital, Eric died a third time, only to be resurrected. We were paying very close attention from our home in Montana and staying in touch with family as we were very worried about him. He was in a coma for, I believe, over a month. And then he regained consciousness, and we figured out that he was going to live. Several years ago, I was visiting with Eric. We try to stay in touch through phone calls and email and text, and whenever we're down in Texas, I go to see him. But we were talking about things in our lives, things in the world, things that stress us, exhausting things, or, well, maybe I was talking about some of those things more than Eric was. But we were discussing, you know, the trials, things that are happening in our lives, and I asked him how he deals with it. You know, if it doesn't just upset him and wear him out and exhaust him. And it was funny because Eric's reply was kind of this, you know, kind of sly smile. And he goes, "Well, Dave, you know what?" He says, I died. Dead. Not just once, not just twice, but three times. He said, you know, when you've been dead, most all the other problems in life aren't that hard. Really kind of easy after you've faced death. Their perspective changes. I don't tend to get upset about those small things anymore because I've already faced the big one. See, that's a change in perspective. Something that I thought of and something that I find I need to be reminded of every once in a while is the things that we go through, the trials that we have, that are the things that we worry about so much that just get to us and bother us and that causes anxiety and stress. Well, yes, they can be hard and they can be stressful, but how do they compare with something like life and death? Maybe if we were concerned about life and death, these other worries wouldn't be so big. So with that in mind, brethren, I'd ask you again, how are you doing? How are we doing right now in this present day and age? And maybe how do we look forward? And if looking forward, we see what will come, how does that change our perspective on how things are now? I want to begin by looking at prophecy today. The book of Daniel. Daniel, who has an incredible amount of prophecy. Daniel chapter 12. Of course, Daniel was a young man who was taken captive at an early age in his life, put into a program by an emperor who was his master, as it were. And he had to start standing up for things. He had to contend from a very early age, not just about what he believed, but even what he was going to put into his mouth. If he was going to obey the laws of God or the laws of man? And what would he worry about? But in Daniel chapter 12, Daniel has a prophecy concerning the end of days. I want to read that, Daniel chapter 12, verse 1. "And at that time, Michael," this is the archangel, "shall stand up, the great prince who stands watch over the sons of your people. And there shall be a time of trouble, such as never was since there was a nation, even to that time. And at that time, your people shall be delivered. Everyone who is found written in the book, and many of those who sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake. Some to everlasting life, some to shame and everlasting contempt. Those who are wise shall shine like the brightness of the firmament, and those who turn many to righteousness like the stars forever and ever. But you, Daniel, shut up the words and seal the book until the time of the end." You know, that's one of the things that a lot of people are wondering is, are we living in the time of the end? Is this pandemic actually part of the apocalypse? Is this the end? It says, "Many shall run to and fro, covering the earth, and knowledge shall increase." Well, that seems pretty applicable to today, doesn't it? We're able to travel around the world, whether physically by a jet or on our computers. I was talking to somebody in Australia just this week, live on my computer. That's easy. "And knowledge shall increase." We live in the information age. It's all about information. And it's also about a lot of false information, which is so easily spread. And that word knowledge isn't just true knowledge. That word actually means cunning. Not the truth of God, but man's cunning. A predatorial knowledge. So you see, a lot of people are wondering what's happening in our world today. There's a lot of anxiety. There's a lot of fear. But we're also told that those who have their names written in the book of life have nothing to be afraid of. That those who have helped others to righteousness will shine like the stars forever. Those who understand this, who have this knowledge as we near the end times, will be comforted by it. We'll have a different perspective as they see things happening in the world. I want to look at the end of the book of these words of God, which we have been given. The book of Revelation, chapter 6. Most of you know that I've been a horseman in my life. I grew up with a love of horses, fascination with them. And so, of course, I relate a lot of stuff to horses and training and people. And this is a passage in the Word of God, which has always fascinated me since I was a little boy. I remember hearing sermons about the four horsemen of the apocalypse. I remember watching Mr. Herbert W. Armstrong on the World Tomorrow telecast and the pictures that were drawn of these horses, these beasts, as it were, and the riders who were on them, and what they symbolized. And it was done with a drawing, with a painting of an artist's creation of what this would look like. And of course, I was captivated by it. I was terrified by it. But it drew me in. Again, there's that word captive. As a boy, again, when I heard so many of those sermons, it terrified me. Prophecy typically did that, especially those who pounded it from the podium. Prophecy. Oh, I had a childlike perspective. It brought up fear and terror. But maybe that's not the perspective that we're supposed to have. Revelation 6 and verse 1. This is the Apostle John being given a divine revelation from God. And he sees what's going to happen at the end time. And he's given a vision in verse 1. Now I saw when the Lamb opened one of the seals, and I heard one of the four living creatures saying with a voice like thunder, "Come and see." And I looked, and behold, a white horse. He who sat on it had a bow, and a crown was given to him, and he went out conquering and to conquer. When he opened the second seal, I heard the second living creature saying, "Come and see." Another horse, fiery red, went out, and it was granted to the one who sat on it to take peace from the earth, and that people should kill one another. And there was given to him a great sword. These horses are symbolic, brethren. They are not actual horses, but this is the horses which are symbolic of the spirit of the day and the age. That white horse is a horse that will appear like righteousness, but it will not bring the truth. It will not bring peace. Rather, it will bring war, which will follow it. This is false religion that will deceive the world. And war that will follow it. And I heard the third living creature say, "Come and see." And so I looked, and behold, a black horse. And he who sat on it had a pair of scales in his hand. And I heard a voice in the midst of the four living creatures saying, "A quart of wheat for a denarius, and three quarts of barley for a denarius. And do not harm the oil and the wine." When he opened the fourth seal, I heard the voice of the fourth living creature saying, "Come and see." So I looked, and behold, a pale horse. And the name of him who sat on it was Death. And hell, or Hades, or the grave, followed with him. And power was given to them over a fourth of the earth, to kill with sword, with hunger, with death, by the beasts of the earth. Brethren, again, we have a white horse, a false gospel, false prophets and ministers, and a red horse, a horse of war and destruction and death. And what follows war, brethren? A black horse. A scarcity of food with scales in its hand, which are to measure out the cost. Again, we look around the world today and we see deception and lies. Those who were supposed to be bringing us peace are leading us to something else, maybe leading us to wars. And as we look around our society today, we see the cost of food becoming greater and greater, and there's a scarcity of it. Try just going in and buying what used to be easy to buy 2 months ago. Try to get that same grocery list today and see how much more it costs today than it used to. And of course, don't harm the oils or the wine. those people who have wealth, they're not going without. In fact, in times of famine and war, those are the last people to go without anything. They still feast, just as Daniel had to prophesy to Belteshazzar that his kingdom was coming to an end, and yet they were feasting and drinking. And then, after famine, starvation, pestilence, and plague, comes a pale horse, death. This is not just a light-colored horse, but the color of an animal that is dead, that is bleached, that is white. These are scary horses. These are the horses that bring fear. And these are the horses which are prophesied to come. These spirits of deception, of falsehood, of war, of unfairness, and of famine, and of plague, and pestilence, and death. This is what will come. Christ describes what this is. His disciples were asking, what will be the signs of the end time? And he essentially describes this, these, not the specific horses, but in order, what's going to come upon the earth. Matthew 24. These are the things that people are looking for. These are the things which people have so much anxiety and fear and worry over right now. Matthew 24 and verse 4. And Jesus answered and said to them, his disciples, take heed that no one deceives you. Boy, just look at how much deception there is on Facebook. People post all sorts of things. Information, some of it true, some of it speculation, some of it outright lies. And we're all feeding off of it. We're all hearing it. Even the news that's delivered is delivered with an agenda or a slant or a perspective because there's a purpose to it. It says, take heed that no one deceives you. For many will come in my name, saying, I am the Christ, and will deceive many. There are many who come in the name of Christ, saying they're Christians or followers of Christ, but they don't direct people to the true worship of God. They lead them to idolatry, worship of false gods. And there are those who will lead them eventually to far worse. The white horse. And then the red follows it, and you will hear of wars and rumors of wars. There's so much speculation about wars that are coming, and there are things happening in this world which don't even make the news. But we hear about them nonetheless, if we're listening, if we're watching. And Christ says, see that you are not troubled. Be at peace in this. For all these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet. For nation will rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom, and there will be famines, pestilences, and earthquakes in various places. All of these are the beginning of sorrows. And yet, Christ says, see that you are not troubled. So I ask again, brethren, how are you doing with all this? Have you been watching what's being put out there, whether it's on Facebook or the news or news stations, whatever gets posted online? Do we see how divided people are becoming? Not just on moral issues, but on political issues, which they've turned into moral issues. Even just on how people are either concerned or not concerned with the coronavirus, this COVID-19. It's interesting to walk into a store where someone is gloved up and has mask on for their own protection, their own safety. And yet, if they see someone who's not doing the same thing, there's a hostility. There's an anger, almost borderline on hatred. You may have seen people freaking out at others online. That's not being not troubled. That's just the opposite. It's being terrified and being aggressive and angry, stirred up. What about people who are grasping for power, seeking to take advantage of this time? Maybe it's for money and wealth, or maybe it's for position and agenda, to tear someone down while they build themselves up. This COVID-19, which is a serious threat, it is an illness which, if you are susceptible to it, will cause you to become very sick, have incredible respiratory issues, and potentially lead to death. Our world, it would seem, is turned upside down. But is this one of the horses? Is it? Brethren, I contend that we don't even know what one of the horses is. We don't even know how to recognize what bad is, because we've had it so good for so long. Brethren, you don't want to know what a horse is? One of these horses that will be unleashed on the world, pestilence, plague, famine. We've seen them before. In the Middle Ages, there was something called the bubonic plague or the Black Death. It was actually a couple of different types of plagues, but it was all labeled the same thing and pretty much the same type of illness. But the Black Death struck the world. Across all nations, all peoples, there was no one not susceptible to dying from it. It didn't matter how young and healthy you were. If you got it, you were dead. In less than 2 years, between 30 and 60% of the population of Europe was completely wiped out. Nearly 75 million people died in Western Europe alone. That's not counting the rest of the world. That's just in Western Europe. Essentially, it's believed that 1/3 of the world's population died of the plague by the year 1350. That's literally a definition of one of the horses. That 1/3 of the population of the world would die. That was a long time ago. People don't even talk about that anymore, not really. But there are some, even alive today, who would remember another pandemic, the Spanish flu. Some who are alive today had family who died from this flu. That broke out and went around the world. It was actually considered our worst pandemic, which is like a flu. Most historians say that this flu, which lasted 2 to 3 years, depending on who you ask, killed between 25 and 50 million people around the world. That was a pale horse. Death. How many people died? And our population wasn't anywhere near what it is today. a huge percentage of people died. Brethren, this COVID-19 coronavirus that we have today, as I was checking statistics as of last night, we have somewhere just over 300,000 deaths worldwide. One third of the Earth's population died from the bubonic plague, the Black Death. Today, 300,000 people have died out of a population of 7.8 billion around the world. I don't know what the math is on that, but it's got to be like 0.0 something, I'm assuming. It's not a third. Now, admittedly, it's not done yet. We don't know to what extent it will go, and I'm not going to try to prophesy against it, but what we've seen so far is not the black horse or the pale horse. It's not one third of the world's population. And yet, when you see the fear and the anxiety which is surrounding us in our world, the shutting down of economies and nations, we've never seen that before. Brethren, I don't believe that this is a horse, but I do believe it's one of the footmen. That may ring a bell with some of you. There's a passage that God spoke to one of his prophets, Prophet Jeremiah, who was sent to prophesy against Israel, and particularly Judah, Jerusalem, before they were going to be taken captive by the Babylonian Empire because they had turned away from God. They'd reverted to false idols, false religions, and doing evil in the sight of God, doing that which was an abomination. And the prophet that he sent was struggling. And God says to him, if you have run with the footmen and they have wearied you, then how can you contend with horses? He's saying you haven't seen anything yet. I want to look back at Jeremiah chapter 12. Because, brethren, we don't know what the end result is going to be of our current crisis, our current pandemic. I personally think that most of us are not going to suffer from a physical illness, but from what this is going to do to our economy, businesses, livelihoods. We don't know what's going to come, but I don't believe it's anything compared to what will come in those final days. Jeremiah 12 and verse 1. Again, Jeremiah has been sent to prophesy against Israel, against Judah, and he's struggling with it. It's hard for him. And so he questions God. You know, so often we think that if you have absolute faith, you just obey. That's really never been the case with any of Christ's servants, with God's people. They question. Jeremiah 12 and verse 1, righteous are you, O Lord, when I plead with you. Yet, let me talk with you about your judgments. Why does the way of the wicked prosper? Why are those happy who deal so treacherously? He's saying, you know, I'm being sent to correct, to exhort these people to change. And yet, the people who were doing evil, the people who are spreading the deceit, and those who are reaping the rewards off their illicit or ill-gotten gains, they're doing better than ever. They're thriving. They're making money. Why? Because I look around and I see the other people who are just eating what they're being fed. They're just surviving in this world, and they're going to suffer too. He says in verse 2, you have planted them. Yes, they have taken root. They're like a weed, a bitter tree, which is bringing death. And it's getting stronger. He says they grow. Yes, they bear fruit. There's more and more people eating that fruit and believing it, buying into it. But you, O Lord, know me. You have seen me, and you have tested my heart towards you. He's heartbroken over this. He's pleading, just as he has pleaded with the people of Israel. And it's interesting because he comes to a point here where he changes. You ever done that? You ever wanted something so badly or pleaded with God for something so badly and it hasn't come? You haven't been given it? You haven't received whatever it is that is our heart's desire? And then we turn from it and we go, fine then. Get rid of it. I don't care anymore. Jeremiah has been pleading with the people. Change. Repent. Come back. And he's so discouraged and somewhat heartbroken over it by what he sees them continuing to do instead that he comes to a point where he's like, that's it, I'm done. And he says, pull them out like sheep for the slaughter. He goes, just do it. Just kill them. Just let them die. And prepare them for the day of slaughter. How long will the land mourn? And the herbs of every field wither. He's reached his point of human and spiritual tolerance. He's like, I'm done. Just get it over with. How long will the land mourn, and the herbs of every field wither? The beasts and birds are consumed for the wickedness of those who dwell there, because they said, he will not see our final end. He's been preaching at these people. It's, you know, you're reveling, you're partying, you think you're fine, nothing's going to come on us. And they won't change. And he's finally tired of preaching it to them. And he's like, that's it. God, let's just get it over with. Just do them in, kill them all. He's human. But he's not dealing with the horses of the apocalypse, of what is really going to come yet. Verse 5 of Jeremiah 12, here's God's answer to him. He's responding to his servant, his prophet, whom he sent to do a job, and his prophet's not seeing any success. He's like, I'm preaching my heart out to them, but they won't change. So he's discouraged. He's wearied. And God says, if you have run with the footmen and they have wearied you, then how can you contend with horses? What he's saying is, you think this is bad? This is nothing compared to what is coming. If you can't even deal with this equal race, how are you going to run a race against something you cannot compare to? This contending means to compete against or run against or struggle against. There's a couple ways of looking at it. If this is a foot race, well, you're two men, you've got a chance. You know, it's fair. It's nothing special about this. So compete. You can run against it. But if you can't even run a foot race, how are you going to run a horse race? There isn't a man alive that can outrun a horse. It's not possible. But God says it's coming. There will be a time when the horses come. Now, if this was not just the contention between competitors, but also what God prophesies was about to come upon Jerusalem, was war. You see, pitting one soldier against another soldier, equally armed, equally trained, you've got a fair chance. But how do you compete against the chariots? Those armored horses and chariots were the tanks of their day. Essentially, they were unstoppable. Remember what terrified the children of Israel leaving Egypt? It was the chariots of Pharaoh. This was the height of military technology for the day. Because if you can't even fight against a soldier armored just like you are, how will you ever stand against the chariots? Those horses which are coming, but they're not here yet. You're already tired? You're already willing to quit? See, it's a matter of perspective. We get so brought into and tied into and worried about and anxious over these things that are happening. But if we really understood what's going to come, we'd realize that these are the good old days. You know, this is nothing compared to what's going to come. We've got it easy. God continues and says, "And if in the land of peace in which you trusted, they wearied you, then how will you do on the floodplain of the Jordan?" You see, Jeremiah was in Jerusalem. He was prophesying. And Jerusalem's got it good. It's the capital city, it's the city of David. The temple's there. They've got walls. They've got wealth. They've got plenty of food. And he's free to preach. You know, the people were actually speaking of God. They hadn't completely turned away from him. You know, he says that they had him in their mouths. They would speak of God. They just wouldn't obey God. They didn't live it. And it tore at his heart. He was so upset and anxious and angry over it. And God's going, "You live in a land of peace. You're fine." Brethren, we live in the land of peace, land of the home, of the brave, the free. We have freedom of religion. I am allowed on this day to preach. It's easy, really. It's not that bad. There's really nothing at risk here. Not like there used to be, not like there are in other parts of the world. We've got it easy. God tells him again, if this has wearied you, if you're exhausted already, how are you going to do in the floodplain of the Jordan? The Jordan River was surrounded with swampy, marshy, somewhat wooded areas. And there were a lot of animals who lived there because there weren't very many men. People didn't want to live down in those marshy areas. And so the wildlife were free to thrive there. And not only were there lots of animals, but there were predators, particularly lions. And men stayed away from there. It was dangerous. Don't go down in there. Don't take your flock next to the marshes. They'll kill you. But you see, when the River Jordan flooded, all those animals were pushed out of their normal habitats, and they came into the lands of men, where they carried off and killed their livestock, their livelihood, and they often killed men. Lions, roaring, seeking whom and what they may devour. Now that was a dangerous place to be. God saying, you live in a walled city, civilization. You got everything you need. If you can't handle this, what are you going to do when you're in the floodplain with the lions all around you? Death. Brethren, I do believe that it is inevitable that the end time is approaching. When, we don't know. But we do know that every day brings us closer to the end. The four horses and their riders will come upon the earth. And when they do, it will be like nothing this earth has ever seen before. It will not just make what we're going through today look bad. It will make what they went through in the Black Death in the Middle Ages look like nothing. I believe, as the song says from, I think it was the 70s, you ain't seen nothing yet. Just like Jeremiah, we live in a land of peace and plenty, prosperity. We have our freedom of religion. And compared to some third world countries, every single person in our congregations here in South Dakota is rich. I know that can be hard to understand because some of us don't feel like we are. Some of the brethren struggle from month to month, holding on to and trying to make the most out of every dollar and every penny. But we're doing better than many of the people in Africa, in parts of Asia and the Middle East, who don't even have a roof over their head, let alone enough to eat, and are worried about someone intent on taking their life. We don't have that. Brethren, compared to what is prophesied to come, none of us really have any problems. Now, I don't want to take away from those who are actually suffering trials, pain, affliction, which could very well lead to their death. For each of us individually, that's the last horse. Some of us will battle with that. We'll fight against it. Indeed, in the end, all of us will die once. But in general, how is it that we already feel wearied by the problems and the trials of today, when the problems and the trials of the future haven't even come? Brethren, I know that in giving this message, I'm speaking to myself, because I let things get to me. I do. I carry things that I know a lot of other people don't. I let things bother me. I don't really so much worry about things. I worry about people. And in some ways, that's my job. That's what I'm supposed to do. And I think I might have something in common with Jeremiah here. Jeremiah was sent to declare a warning to Israel and Judah, and he loved them. It was his homeland. In fact, the people from his own city wanted to kill him. That was heartbreaking for him. But he was sent to correct them, to prophesy. And he wanted them to repent. He wanted them to change and turn back to God. And I know that he agonized over it. He lost a lot of sleep. I get that. That's exhausting. It's funny because in my ministry, and you can meet people in the world who contend with the faith, are against the faith. So I've met people who don't like me. Now, as a people person, I don't like that. I want to be liked. I'm a good guy. What? You don't like me? That bothers me. Because I truly love them. I truly love people. And because of my faith, there are those who think I'm a heretic. And it's interesting to see how they would fight against me. And that bothers me. Because I'm like, but everything I believe is in here. The law, God's Sabbath, his holy days, it's all here. That's what I believe in. So why am I being persecuted or attacked? And it bothers me. It wears me out. I agonize over it. What can I do differently? How can I get this person to see? And the fact is I'm really just dealing with footmen. You know? This isn't bad. So I have to change my perspective. Because I've had it pretty easy. Truly. Christ talks about, again, what is going to come. And this is a lesson for me and for all of us about our calling to be children of God, obedient children of God. Matthew 24 and verse 9 says, "Then they will deliver you up to tribulation and kill you, and you will be hated by all nations for my name's sake. Because of having God's name written upon us as Christians and as obedient people, obeying God's laws and Sabbaths." It says, "You will suffer tribulation, and there are those who will hate you and try to kill you." I've never had anybody try to do that to me. Not for my faith. I've got it pretty easy, don't I? I'm not worried about someone kicking down my door and dragging me and my family out because of our faith. In verse 10, it says, "And then many will be offended and will betray one another and hate one another." I don't think I've ever had it that bad. I don't like necessarily what I have had. It wasn't fun. But should it have wearied me or exhausted me or any of us in the way that it did? In verse 11, "And then many false prophets will rise up and deceive many. And because lawlessness will abound, the love of many will grow cold." Brethren, these are the horses that are going to come. We have them in the book of Revelation from the Apostle John. And we have them from Christ's own lips, his own words, of what will come, of what those horses will be like. But brethren, today, we're not contending with the horses. We're just running with the footmen. We're just contending with what is normal, what is natural. And we have this bump on the road, which gives us some idea of what may come. And we're envisioning it in some ways, like the children of Israel, watching those chariots afar off, watching the horsemen of Pharaoh off in the distance. And just like the children of Israel, we panic. And maybe we sound like them, or maybe we sound like Chicken Little, and the sky is falling. But the horsemen aren't here yet. We're just contending with the footmen. And these footmen, brethren, are supposed to be training. This is what sharpens us and strengthens us and prepares us. If we allow ourselves to be prepared in the right way, with the perspective that God has given to us. As Christ said, "See that you are not troubled." And my friend who faced death, who was dead, that fourth horse, that pale horse, the grave. Like he said, once you've been there, nothing else is really all that hard. So if we change our perspective, maybe the requirement that we endure until the end will not be so hard, because what we're enduring isn't necessarily one of the horsemen. Brethren, we individually, you personally, myself, and as a church have a job to do. We have to preach the gospel. We have to prepare a people. Let's not grow overly weary of the training, of this time, of this calling that we're being given, of the differences, of the disagreements, of the disputes, of these footmen, these small issues. Because in the reality, brethren, they're all small issues. And as we see those days approaching, brethren, let us be instead like the prophet Elijah. Let us gird up our loins and let's run with the horses. And if we do, then we will endure to the end. Christ finished Matthew 24. In verse 13, he says, "But he who endures to the end shall be saved. And this gospel of the kingdom will be preached in all the world as a witness to all the nations, and then the end will come."